Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, in this case, science, and specifically the science of Fai Chi. It's pronounced Chi, even though the Chinese spelling is Qi. And so we are combining Western, which is vital sciences, which means plants, and also the energy that comes from plants, with Qi, which is a type of energy that we'll say keeps us alive, and without it, we couldn't be here. So I'm going to talk about that tonight and how to stay healthy using this science. I've talked about it in passing, really, like on our last show, in dealing with the centers and energy. But I thought tonight we'd talk about the science itself and how we can use it to be of some value to ourselves. Also, I want to mention that tonight we are going for an hour and a half, but next week, our gift for the summer is ending, and it's been a joy to be able to be with you for the full hour and a half that we had. But we got to go back to our regular fitting into the hour time, which is only about 55 minutes, because there are other people that want that time. And the station actually suggested to us that we use that extra time because they would not have had something to really offer. And I guess we're better than nothing. Of course, we're a lot better than nothing. And we appreciate that tremendously. It was a great gift. And now they have some shows. It's kind of going to be kind of split up between a couple of people from week to week, that they'll be filling in both that half hour and the remaining half of it, so it'll be a full hour after us, and additional hours, from what I've heard, during the rest of the evening. And that starts next week. So next week I'll be on at the same time, beginning, but we won't be able to go as long. And again, thanks to BBS for allowing us to be here for you. So we're going to try and let me talk about the energies that we are going to get into tonight in a kind of technical way, but really it's more practical. I'm trying to keep this show so that it's something people can understand about themselves and other people rather than just some abstract science lesson or biology lesson or something like that. There'll be a little bit of that in there, but not the most of the show is going to be about staying healthy. Okay, so let's start off with the science part. We have to start off with definitions and understanding what we're talking about. And to begin with, anything that's phyto, and phi comes from phyto, it's a Latin kind of thing. I'm not great at Latin. But anyway, anything that's in that class means it's coming from a source of plants. And we're talking about an energy that plants take in, that they control. Now, the interesting thing about plants is without them, we wouldn't be here. Most people don't know this, I think, but plants really are the foundation for life. Everybody thinks, oh, it's animals, you know, and people. Well, until there are plants, animals are really not on the list of life. You can claim that there are some pre-animal single-celled organisms running around that by their nature, they're microorganisms, they kind of aren't exactly plants. And so therefore, they existed along with the beginning of what we call plants. However, in reality, animals are life that animates itself and is capable of responding in somehow, in some ways, directly with and to its environment and can adapt. Really, it'd be hard to argue in most cases that's true of the microorganisms that aren't exactly plants. And most of the microorganisms that started actually somehow came and are related to what we would consider to be microorganisms related more to plants than to animals. Bacteria really do fall more towards the animal side in the microorganism kingdom. And our planet started from basically phytoplankton type of organisms and from bacteria. So it's kind of like there was a symbiosis there. Now, getting to what tonight's show is about. Plants in general have a very unusual way of dealing with energy. It's different than animals. Plants are actually, for the most part, not animated in any way that we can see. I mean, they move a little bit, but they don't move in response and in adaptation to immediate issues in the environment. Over long periods of time, they do, certainly, but not in any short term. And so they have a different kind of, we'll call it, philosophy that has to do with the processing of energy. Plants use the opposite types of energy sources that human beings do for pretty much the opposite purposes. So when we think about plant respiration, as an example, they are taking in carbon and expelling oxygen. Isn't that interesting? And we are taking in oxygen and expelling carbon. Now you might say, well, what's going on there? Well, carbon is like a structuring kind of element. It gives more structure to whatever it's part of. And plants use the structure in carbon to allow them to eventually make their own source of energy, which we call sugars. This is a little different than what human beings and, of course, animals do, because we're doing the opposite. We are consuming the sugars from plants, whether we eat the plants directly or we eat animals that eat the plants. And so we're consuming the carbon the plants are making in the sugars. Actually, it's carbon with hydrogen, so they're called hydrocarbons. And then we expel or give out the carbon dioxide, which is causing us to have a totally different kind of cycle. It has to do with something called a Krebs cycle. And we have a totally different kind of method in terms of being able to use energy that allows us to, instead of plants are very consistent because of the structuring of the carbon, they're very, very consistent in the way they use energy. Their energy use is almost entirely based on photosynthesis and certain mineral sources in the ground, whereas our, and so they're fixed. They have a really fixed way that they can use energy, and that controls them. They can't animate themselves the way we can. They can't change as they choose to against or with the environment, because unfortunately they're stuck into this kind of cast of having to, for the most part, move only based upon a very slow chemistry. We have, and so do animals in general, the ability to alter our environment, alter ourselves, change the pace at which we metabolize almost instantly, and we're on the opposite side of this cycling of the way energy is used. Plants are very consistent, and they store the consistency of the chemical process within themselves. We are big users, but we aren't good at storing, and we have to consume energy frequently, and we use it sometimes in very large amounts, which plants are more consistent in not jumping up suddenly and using a lot of energy and then becoming quiescent, whereas animals are just the opposite, very, very active. Okay, so if we look at that, then what does that mean about plants? Why why should we be concerned? Why is phyto so important to us? Phytoscience so important to us if we're supposedly in some ways better? Well, because we, especially humans, by the way, but also animals, live their life pretty much as we think and choose to, and the process is sometimes very self-centered. And as we direct energy through ourselves based upon our will, our choices, and our freedom, we sometimes do so in the wrong ways because we're selfish. And the energy that we're using is misused in terms of balance within our system. Plants are just the opposite. They almost innately have balance, and some of them, we call herbal plants, have a unique way of establishing balances in themselves that actually improve upon or reduce the levels of, we'll say, inconsistent and selfish use of energies that animals and people do all the time. So this is a fascinating thing, that there are some plants, most of them referred to as herbal plants. Some of them are lichens, and they're not exactly herbs. And some of them actually would even fall outside of that class. They're back to the plankton variety. Chlorella, which is considered part of herbal medicine, is actually not an herb at all. It's based upon a primitive organism that grows in shallow waters. So interestingly, we have a kind of natural science that was created by God, or our creator, if you prefer, that allows plants to heal animals and people. And sometimes plants that have been tampered with by humans, other plants can heal. Isn't that interesting? So we have an amazing a variety of plants that can do almost anything to solve all of the human and animal illnesses. Now, if you're interested in biblical stuff, you may know that some Bibles, depending upon what religion, refer to this and give credence to the fact that herbs are a way that God created a science that can be used by all living things, including animals and people. Now, you might think, well, that was just a lucky guess, whoever wrote that. I find that more than luck, because it just took me quite a few minutes to explain a science that I did not go into very deeply with you. Yet, you could see that this is not by happenstance. So, if that's true, and we can cure all diseases, although some we don't know yet how to, through the plant kingdom, and especially herbs, then it seems like there's a lot of what some people don't like the name of intelligence involved in how the world was created. So there's proof to some extent of the existence of a creator if you even look at the science of what we're going to be discussing tonight at 5G. All right, so how do plants store the energies? Is it all in this sugar thing? Well, actually, it's not. The sugars are sometimes converted into certain types of oils and fats. Some of them are called glycogens and other things. And these can be stored for very long periods of time. Sugars are rather fragile, and they actually don't store exceptionally well in some circumstances, depending upon the environment that they're exposed to. And also, plants store, most importantly, in their electromagnetic part of their existence, which a lot of human beings don't know anything about. Some people call it the etheric body. They store huge amounts of energy, equally or more so in this part of the cells. And so if we consume the plant before the etheric body starts to diminish, which it happens over days, weeks, months, depends on how they're stored and cared for, then, and if we protect them with other plants that can symbiotically work with them, you can get maybe many years of storage out of them. This etheric part remains intact. And so when we consume the herb, we are consuming its electromagnetic field, which is having a profound effect upon our electromagnetic field. And this is part of understanding what we're going to be discussing the rest of the show. But there's still a biochemical side to this. So for the people who don't believe in what I just said about electromagnetic, but you do buy into biochemistry, you can argue this from either side. I like the electromagnetic side better because it has a better explanation in terms of the truth, as far as I'm concerned. But if you prefer the biochemical, that's okay. We could still have a conversation about that. All right. So this is a fascinating field, as you can see, because we're saying that all health can be improved upon, all illnesses treated and cured through existing herbal plants, and in some cases, even some parts of some animals that consume the plants and change the characteristics to some extent. So there's even a little bit of animals that could be applied to the same concept. Now, I'm not in favor of eating animals, but you may be, and a lot of people are. But I'm not talking about consuming large parts of animals. Usually it's the parts of animals that doesn't matter to them anymore. Some people refer to, like, the hair on antlers as being pretty important, but as far as the animal that gave up the antlers, unless they were killed specifically for them, they don't care about that. That hair and the skin that covers the antler is really irrelevant to them once they're out of the season, usually where they're mating. And that again comes from the male variety more than the female. So, and that's an example of an animal product, but it isn't by any stretch the only animal product that can have some effect on us. All right, let me continue on now. And by the way, the best way to use animals are ways we still don't know. It isn't about consuming them at all. It's about using them symbiotically to do things. And if anybody's watched like some versions of the newest version of Star Trek, they show in there in science fiction using various animals from other planets that provide something, do something inside the bodies of humans to help them get better. Actually, there's a lot of truth to that, but we're pretty far away from that in terms of understanding how animals could interrelate with us. We pay too much attention to eating them. Okay, so let me go on now with this concept and then work it into a practical model. What is qi? We have got to talk about that. We got the phi part that has to do with plants and how they store energies differently than humans. And if we consume the plants in the correct way, in some combination, not just in single plant, we can affect the energies in our centers. Now, let me go to the concept of qi. Qi is really part of what is known as the first of the three kundalinis. Now, what is a kundalini? Well, a kundalini is an energy that is of spiritual nature. It comes from the third dimension of time and space. We live in the seventh right now. So the third dimension of time and space, sometimes referred to as the spiritual or atmic dimension. Some people call it the nirvanic dimension. There's a lot of names, but okay. And so this dimension of time and space is the dimension that is the prototype, creates the prototypes for all life that uses form, which is almost all the life in the universe. All life that uses form is prototyped with energy coming from the third dimension. And it has, there are two types of energy that exist in the third dimension. One of them is called elementary or elemental energy. And it's energy that responds mostly to itself. It's not all that cooperative. And it basically creates the beginning of gravity. There's no gravity above the atomic plane. But gravity begins at the very top of the atomic plane from this very elementary type of energy. In addition, there's another kind of energy called devonic. Devonic energy is energy that has communication not only about and with itself in types of energy like itself, but also helps to maintain or sustain life by being cooperative in a group conscious sense. And it seeks to help grow more of its creator. Elementary energy only does that as a consequence, not as a design. And so the devonic energy has a more, we'll call it a creative side to it, for sure. And the elementary energy just kind of does what it's there to do, which is to gravitate towards itself and become more big. Now, that's all well and good. That's true of every dimension of time and space that energy exists on. So you could use that same model. Besides the atomic, it applies to all the other dimensions. But when something becomes highly spiritual within the dimension we are in, whether it's a human being or an entire planet, it tends to attract some, but not a huge amount, of the elementary energy, elemental energy, in the spiritual plane. Because that energy is attuned to the thought of God better than any other energy, even though it's still elementary energy. And so this energy is then attracted interdimensionally into the realm we exist in. And our planet actually does this. As our planet creates life, it brings in matching life it creates, depending upon how much that life follows the thought of its own creator, how virtuous that life is in understanding that concept. It brings in some of this more elementary energy from the spiritual plane, and it actually, through its tremendous attractive power, the spirit, the collective spirit of our planet, call it Spirit of Earth, brings in this energy, and it literally comes into the seventh dimension and becomes part of the Earth itself as things are growing in the Earth. And so this energy is then piped into the life that's growing into the Earth, and whatever is attached to the Earth gets the majority of the collection of this this first type of kundalini energy, which is sometimes called pingala, but most of the time is called chi. Okay, so you got this chi energy. And the chi energy is readily absorbed by plants. And some plants absorb and use the chi energy based upon what type of chi. There's subgroups of chi. And each subgroup of chi, which is a subgroup to the major energies that we're familiar with, become dominant in a specific kind of plant. So the plant is storing the chi energy for use by, guess who? Us. And animals that eat the plants as well. Animals are driven by their group soul to consume certain plants when they need a certain kind of chi energy. Human beings don't have that information conveyed to them from their soul. They have to figure it out for themselves. Okay. got to think it through. Animals kind of know it instinctively. And so this is how the energy gets into the plants. But there's another energy that matches the qi energy that is necessary for the plants. The qi energy is considered feminine energy. Feminine. Okay? And you might say, well, feminine, what's that mean? Well, it has a higher attractive ratio towards the centers that are, or chakras that are considered feminine. And I'll explain what those chakras are in a little bit here. And so that's where the qi energy tends to be into a, what we call a feminine variety of energy. However, there is also a more masculine variety of qi energy that responds and becomes connected to a thing called prana. Prana is definitely a more masculine kind of energy. And it's has more influence over the centers that are considered masculine centers. And I'll tell you the difference between masculine and positive energies in a little bit here, but I'm just trying to give you this kind of how this is kind of ballet going on, dance between the energies. And so I want to make that clear to you so that you have some understanding of what's really going on inside of us. Because a lot of people don't, and then they don't understand why they're getting sick. And then they don't understand how to get well. So I'm trying to give a basis for this so that by the end of the show, we can really start talking about how to stay well. Okay. So far, I hope you're following me because, as usual, this is off into the deep science of La La Land. And I know some people say, why does he always start the show with that stuff? Well, because if I did it at the end of the show, you'd be sleeping. So this is a way I can get you while you're awake. All right. Or maybe you have turned me off, and that wouldn't be good. All right. Let's continue on. Prana comes from the sun, not from the earth. Prana is what most plants have to use to take the energy that's coming from the earth and to store it properly. And the way they start storing it is into sugars, and then the sugars, as I said, sometimes are converted into other chemistry as well. And in some cases, it's the animal that creates the sugars into a different chemistry. But at any rate, this is what plants do. They are taking the prana from the sun, and the prana is etheric. It's electromagnetic energy. But it's living electromagnetic energy, not dead. Dead electromagnetic energy is what your radio is doing right now, or I should say your computer. That's the kind of energy that does not support life directly. Whereas energy that directly supports life is at a different phase. The same frequency, but a different phase from electromagnetic energy that powers our televisions and does all kinds of other things. And so, when I say power, it gives you the signal so you can see something. And so, this is the interesting part about what we're talking about. You've got to have life energy. Life energy is something we haven't even discovered for the most part. Now, some people like Wilhelm Reich and others, yeah, they discovered that a long time ago, but human beings in general don't know about it. I'm talking about it, and so maybe you will, but a lot of people still are hesitant to believe in what I'm talking about. Okay, so the plants are taking this life energy of qi, and then they're taking the prana from the sun. And then through a process that many people are familiar with called photosynthesis, they change the biochemistry inside themselves, but also they're combining the prana with the qi, combining them in a balanced way so that the plant has both positive male and negative female qualities. Now, positive and negative don't mean good, bad. They mean how they're used in centers and within electrical context within the body. Nothing about good and bad at all. Okay, so this is what's going on inside a plant. A little tiny plant is doing more than you ever thought possible, right? That's true. All right. let's move ahead. So what is Fai Chi then? What is Fai Chi doing? Well, once this energy enters into the body of a human being, the Chi has to constantly get more pranic energy. Pranic energy quickly diminishes, whereas Chi stays pretty constant. Chi is the feminine. The pranic is fast-moving and very powerful, but short-lived. So, if we don't have constant revigoration with pranic energies, which comes through our atmosphere, by the way, it would be dangerous for human beings over a protracted period of time. We would tend to get ill. We don't discover this because most people don't live in an environment in which there's little or no pranic energy. But some few people do, and those people usually get ill if they have to stay in that environment for a long period of time. Something to consider. Okay, back to the whole point of the discussion. What does the energy do once it enters our etheric or electromagnetic bodies? Well, it continues to animate and enliven the cells that we call our, we'll say, foundation of our physical body. The cells in our physical body don't live just by processing sugars and building proteins, etc. They also have to have this combination of chi and pranic energies. And this is the part of biology that is as confused as you could possibly get. Because right now, as I speak, if you go to most schools that teach biology, they don't talk about cells involved with electromagnetic energies, etc. There has been recent discoveries in the last decade dealing with the electromagnetic fields around cells. And at least it's being discovered that they exist. What they do and how they do it is what I'm telling you, but that hasn't gotten discovered yet in the mainstream parts of biochemistry and other parts of science. So cells work off of two things. They work off a biochemical process or processes using a system called ATP and to make energy. But they also have to have matching chi energy that is in correct balance. And we're down to the cellular level because I want to start there so that we can see where the beginning of this process is. If a whole bunch of cells in our body are deprived of the proper amounts of chi with the correct recipe of prana attached to it, the ATP process of making energy starts to slow down. And the cell becomes, we'll say, mutated and, in many cases, damaged. Open to some agent, which is usually running around, a virus or a bacteria or a fungus or cancer, or lots of possibilities to take it over and to steal the life of the cell. And you could say, well, so then the allopathic model that you catch a germ and that causes you to get sick is really not true, and that's right. What happens is the cell becomes first damaged by the improper balance of chi and prana around it, and that causes the cell to fail in many ways. Same is true of the cells that protect other cells, which is our immune system. Everything from different kinds of white blood cells to special kinds of antibodies, which are made by cells. The antibodies are like little proteins that can attach themselves to things that aren't supposed to be in our body. So all this is done basically because these cells have to have the right balance of energy. And plants have the balance of energy because they work in a very slow, very methodical system. So plants grow much more, we'll say, healthy than unhealthy most of the time. But soil conditions can ruin this for them. And under certain circumstances, even if they don't get enough prana from the sun, or if they also are in some way poisoned or changed, then they also are open to illness, although plant illnesses are not quite as common as they are in animals, because they continue to make a lot of, we'll say, correcting elements to their electromagnetic field. But there are things that will destroy the field, particularly if the plants are cultivated. So what I'm talking about are more wild plants, usually are pretty healthy. If you start cultivating plants and you do the wrong things, you can destroy that balance, especially if you hybrid them too far, and you might destroy the very thing you're trying to produce, which is a healthy plant. Okay, back to the inside of our bodies. We got little cells running around, and they need a correct electromagnetic field around them, which they share with other cells. So another funny thing that happens is if the electromagnetic field gets screwed up in certain cells, they can't communicate and work as a unit with other cells. It is through the electromagnetic field of life that cells become part and maintain an organism. And if that field starts breaking down, then they even might stay somewhat healthy within themselves, but they don't function as an organism anymore. They can also, therefore, in another way, become cancerous. So this is a fascinating, different way of looking at a human being than the way most people do. Because what we're really talking about is it's these energies that are so crucial to maintaining health. And unfortunately, we don't respond in the Western part of the world to understanding them and to using them properly. And so we are out there trying to solve all of our problems through the physical material side of existence, ignoring the more subtle etheric elements or electromagnetic, which are very important, the life types of electromagnetic energies. Okay, so when we come back, I'm going to go over with you how the energies move about the body, what they cause in terms of problems with each of the chakras, and what kind of plants, et cetera, we might be looking for in terms of herbal plants, et cetera, to try to do something about this, and a lot more. So stay tuned, because I just went through the basics of the science that we're going to be using throughout the rest of the half of this, the remaining half of the show. We will be back, give or take, in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about staying healthy with the science of Phi Chi. That is a word, P-H-Y-Q-I, which is the Chinese correct spelling of Chi, which we pronounce or spell C-H-I in many circumstances. Many years ago, the spiritual group I'm part of and some people involved in this part of the work we do, got this word in science patented at the patent office. So that doesn't mean that it's only us that can say or use it. It just means that we needed to protect it for our purposes. And we think that this science was created by God. So I guess that's one way. I don't think we put that in our papers, but we should have. You know, that would have been interesting. Okay, so getting to this whole question, what the heck is Phi Chi? Well, Phi Chi is understanding how the energies are correctly moving in a human body or an animal's body so that the maximum amount of life is maintained in the body and the least amount of degradation of, we'll call it the destruction of cells, and the life energy of the body is prevented so that a person can live healthier and longer if they follow this particular science. And let me start with the idea that there are seven major chakras. Three of them respond to more feminine types of energies, which would be the chi side, predominantly the chi side of the energies within us. The other four respond more to the pranic side of energies, which is still chi, but it's the chi that's influenced in a way greater than by itself by pranic energy. So, and let me name those centers so that you understand what I'm talking about. They're sometimes referred to as chakras, but I like the word center to kind of westernize it and people can understand what I'm talking about. In each case, you should be aware that the major centers in a human being are completely within the realm of being conscious. So we can be aware of and conscious of our own centers and understand what's going on in them. This is not true in some animals, for sure. So we have fully developed centers. That's our major centers are really, they're big time developed. And we'll start from the head chakra. The head chakra is sometimes referred to as the energy of the first ray. However, most of the energy really in the head chakra is the first sub-ray, really, of the heart chakra. It's kind of hard to understand that, but there's very little real first-ray energy on Earth because it's so dark and it's not a sacred planet, that if you had a lot of truly first-ray energy, not a sub-first-ray energy of second-ray energy, things would become extremely destructive fast. And so to avoid this, it's kind of on a restricted basis. But nonetheless, the head chakra is where first-ray energy moves through, regardless if it's the first sub-ray energy of the heart or if it's truly first-ray energy. And first-ray energy is masculine. It's more influenced by pranic factors working on the chi. And we'll get to what that means in a little bit. Okay. And then the second ray energy goes through the heart chakra. And a lot of people are familiar with that chakra. And the head chakra is actually not in the head, but above it. It's, these chakras really are in our etheric or electromagnetic bodies. They're not part of our physical body. And they interpenetrate, and they have an effect on all energies within the body, but they are really outside. So, and then the third type of ray energy is the throat chakra. Oh, by the way, the heart chakra is a feminine energy, less affected by pranic energies, much more dominated by chi energies, which are pure chi, not chi that has been modified by prana. And you might say, well, again, I want to know about that. I'm going to tell you. Don't worry about it. We'll get into it, the feminine and masculine elements. Okay, and then, so the throat chakra is a more masculine or pranically influenced chi type of energy. And that is, that, of course, is connected to the throat and the mouth, et cetera, and also the lungs. And anything that deals with inhaling oxygen, by the way. So this is important. And also even nitrogen, because air is really, it's about 80%, almost that, 78%, something like that, of nitrogen. Most people don't know that, but it's true. About 21% oxygen. The remainder is mostly nitrogen, and there's trace gases, starting with carbon dioxide, and moving down from that point to very, very small amounts of some other gases. Okay, so the third ray functions with the third type of what's called energy, which is, again, pranically influenced more than that. And then the fourth type of energy is in the sacral center at the base of the spine. And that particular energy is feminine, again, mostly uninfluenced by prana, and more purely influenced by the chi itself. The fifth ray is between the eye, between the two eyes, the brow chakra, and sometimes called the Ajna center. And this particular center processes energy that, again, is more influenced by pranic types of influencing energies over the chi. And then there's the sixth ray center, which is a solar plexus center. Think of that as around your stomach, but it influences the liver and the pancreas, the spleen, to some extent the spleen. The spleen shares. It's a non-major center. It doesn't have consciousness connected to it. So it just kind of splits its energy between the sacral center and the solar plexus center. Okay, and then finally, the last center, and that sixth center is, again, feminine, definitely feminine. And then finally, the last center is the sexual center, which is, again, affected more by pranic energies. And the sexual center is the most dense type of energies that flow through the bodies of living things. Definitely affected more by pranic energies. Okay, so all this is going on in our body. We've got some kind of balance going on between male and female, pranic, more influenced energies, which are male, and less influenced pranic energies, less influenced by pranic energies, which are female. And they're all chi. They're all part of this type of energy that is the giving of life from our planet Earth. Very important. And when we talk about staying healthy, in order to stay healthy in these centers, we've got to have the minor centers that are connected to the major centers and connected to almost every little part of our body including all the cells that work in that part of the body, functioning properly. How many of those centers are there? About 370, give or take. That's the total number of centers. It's a lot. It's virtually all the places that acupuncture is used on, and some that even acupuncture can't be used on, like in the eye, et cetera, itself. So the total numbers is pretty large. And some of these centers are obscure because they aren't used in acupuncture and they're not even known about, like the ones in the eyes. And so certain centers have more obscure minor centers associated with them, such as the Ajna Center does because of the eyes. And so this is most interesting how the body is working then. The minor centers we have no consciousness about. We can't tell by feeling or even being sensitive to ourselves what's going on in our minor centers because there's not a connection directly to them. The minor centers are feeding energy in and out of a major center, and the major center doesn't keep track that well of where the energy is coming from in sense of what minor centers are being influenced on a conscious level. We're more conscious of the totality of the centers working, but we're not very conscious of how the minor centers are working, making it difficult for us to treat ourselves sometimes. But if we really became aware of this model that I'm talking about tonight, that may not be true. We might be able to become more conscious in an indirect way of what's happening in our minor centers. I think that's really neat, actually. Okay, so here we have a model in which energy follows thought greater than its own. Energy has some of its own thought. Demonic energies think collectively together, so they have some thought. But for the betterment of the group and the organism they're part of. Whereas elemental energies, which is chi is part of, by the way, chi, unfortunately, tends to become elemental. And it is elemental energy. And it tends to want to collect in one place unless it's being directed by some of the divinic energies around it, including prana. And so consequently, chi tends to do its own thing if we aren't directing it. And its own thing is to literally gravitate towards the densest, darkest energy that surrounds it rather than the light. It's the overpowering nature of prana that keeps chi from doing that. Okay? Now let me explain that. Four of the major centers, which I've already discussed with you, called masculine centers, are controlled more by prana. Those centers are kept, we'll say, more healthy as a result of the enlightening nature of prana, provided that the chi that they are affecting is in balance in the correct amount to the amount of prana that is available. I hope you're following this. Prana varies throughout the day. If people don't go to bed before midnight, and especially sometimes earlier the better, the results are that there's very little prana around them after midnight. People who are up a lot during the night tend to produce ill health in themselves because the result is there's less prana available, and prana is one of the mechanisms that's automatic, and we don't have to do a lot of thinking to solve our problems with it, because it keeps over half of our centers going in, we'll say, the right direction, not having too much or too little energy in them. Because remember, the chi without the prana, it just wants to kind of hang out, and it doesn't move properly. Chi is only happy, though, and this is weird, when it is moving. If you make chi not move, it starts becoming what is called negative chi. Instead of producing life, it produces death. But unfortunately, chi isn't advanced enough to do this on its own. And the divinic energies that exist within our bodies aren't strong enough on their own to do this for us for very long or very much. So if we ignore our demonic energies, which most people do, and eat wrong and sleep wrong and do many other things, more importantly, actually, such as being selfish and focusing our attention on keeping energy inside ourselves, although we may not recognize what that is, what selfishness does, then the results are illness because the energies aren't moving. The prana is no longer working properly because we're blocking it. And we may also be living a lifestyle by choice that limits it or even eliminates it. Wow. You're starting to make some sense here? I hope so. I hope so. The feminine centers are always more prone to disease than are the masculine. So what are the feminine centers? Again, I'm going to give them to you again. They are centers 2, 4, and 6, which is the heart chakra, the sacral center, and the solar plexus. Most diseases in human beings that are serious ailments go towards those centers, serious ailments, the ones that become, over time, very aging and very, unfortunately, life-threatening. What areas of the body do those control? Well, the heart chakra controls the heart and the blood. Okay? So diseases of the heart and blood are oftentimes fatal and very serious. The solar plexus center controls most of the internal organs in our abdomen, and the liver being the most important one. But nonetheless, any one of them that goes can be fatal. And in all cases, all of them collectively can make us quite ill. Oh, starting to make sense? Okay. And the last are the feminine centers, which helps to balance the energies with prana, by the way. That's one of its jobs, is to balance the prana with the chi and make sure the chi is moving in the body, is the sacral center, which controls the colon, especially and most importantly, the small colon or small intestine, where almost all of the energy is and all the chemistry is brought into the body. And then, of course, the large intestine is where we eliminate the what's left after that. So the interesting thing about this, and it's also the area where we work with many microorganisms, so trillions of them, to produce various effects in chemistry so that our liver has the right materials to work with. This is a fascinating system. The majority of fatal and or very, we'll say, aging type of diseases are connected to these feminine centers. Wow. That doesn't mean you can't get a disease connected with the throat chakra, as an example. But those diseases are usually transient, and they usually only kill you after you have one or the other diseases with the feminine centers having done a lot of bad stuff to you, and then you might get pneumonia and die, which is really a third right center. But the pneumonia is like a secondary cause. The main cause is that you have some other kind of more serious problem going on. I hope this is making sense to you. You probably have never heard this before, even if you're a physician or a biologist or whatever. So some of this might be, you might be clicking in and saying, whoa, wait a second. Maybe this is true, because you might already know a lot about the body, which is good. I hope you do. All right, so let me continue on. So the chi energy must be moving to create life. And what prevents it from moving is our choices, people's choices, in the way we live and the way we choose to give or not give, living and giving. And those choices end up making us either healthy or staying well. If you are having ailments and you start thinking about those ailments in terms of your life behaviors and life interactions along and choices along with this science that I'm trying to introduce tonight, You may come up with some new answers for how you can help yourself. Answers that right in the present day have been confusing and not getting you anywhere, because modern, quote-unquote, modern health, modern medicine is very, very ignorant of almost everything I've taught about in today's show. And if what I'm saying is the truth, then they're working with the lies. Welcome to universal health care, which will end up killing very large amounts of people earlier. Why? Because it's completely into the medical allopathic model, which is almost 100% wrong. When you follow the wrong model and everybody has to follow it, everybody suffers. Good reason not to have this thing happen to us, but it has already somewhat been determined, unless we try to undo it. Okay, so let's get back to tonight's show. If we're going to instill health into ourselves, we need to be particularly concerned about what we're doing to the etheric part of ourselves as well as the physical, going back to that etheric system, the electromagnetic energies. We've got to have enough prana to be able to get the chi moving. And if we don't have enough prana, nothing else we do will change that. There are two ways that I am familiar with to get prana. One is to live in an environment and sleep and awake in an environment in accord with solar energy, because the sun is what creates prana. If we don't do that, we're going to have more difficulties. For people who live in environments like northern Alaska, etc., where for months on end, they don't have as much prana. They have some. They don't have as much. Those people are more prone to certain kinds of illnesses and problems. Not just depression. I know about depression. A lot of people know about that. But prana is difficult to reproduce, and you can't do it with just an electric light bulb. I know people have tried that. Even if you have the right physical wavelength frequencies, you don't have the right phase. Prana is at a different phase than the frequencies that are in even the best light bulbs. And so you might feel better as far as depression is concerned, but it won't change the outcome as far as the total amount of prana. And so what do? You have to eat herbs. You got to eat plants that have stored some of the prana that balances out where you're having problems, so that you can heal yourself during those times when the prana is low in your system, because you're not sleeping properly, because you're living selfishly, which is always a bad thing, because you're eating improperly in general, and because you're stressed. Now, what is stress? Stress is where the energies that you are using go against your life energies. What could those energies be? High amounts of anger, frustration, a lot of negative thinking, even if it isn't necessarily coming out in how you behave. Especially if you behave that way, it's very bad. You're going to create a lot of negative energies. All those things will undo the pranic factors, will cause the chi to slow down and act erratically, and to start gravitating towards certain parts of your body that are weak. They're weak because they're dark, because your selfishness has been more about that part of the kind of environment that you're in by your own choices. So what I'm saying is all illnesses are created by ourselves. Now, there are some confounding things about this, and that is that it isn't just what we did in this lifetime. Sometimes it's also what we did in prior lifetimes, and it's in our spiritual genes. So we have some illnesses that come about more from, especially in children and young adults, or from their prior life than the present life. I don't see too many children that are really selfish, but a lot of the time, their prior life was not good for them. Then they have the confusion and the chi. What if there is not enough chi? Because if too much chi is going one place, there's always a deficit in another. If there is insufficient chi, instead of there being stress and illness, there's weakness and withering, atrophy. So too little chi causes that effect, which is just as dangerous to life. Now, what does an atrophy look like? Let's say we're talking about the stomach. Well, too much energy in the stomach, going in one direction, produces some very serious types of illnesses, everything from stomach and liver cancer and pancreatic cancers. Those are almost always fatal, and it's very hard to survive them. Then, if you have too little energy, you end up with extremely poor initial digestion. Depends what's going on then later in the intestines. But certainly the more critical element is the liver. And if the liver is weak, the results are pretty devastating. Extreme fatigue, an inability to process what the colon gives it in terms of energies. And in an electromagnetic sense, in the etheric realm, the liver becomes dysfunctional. It has these four different lobes, and they don't work together properly. One lobe might work, and the other ones don't work quite at the same level. And when you have that happening, the imbalance causes toxicities to develop, and the liver destroys itself. You create a cirrhotic condition. The liver starts dying, because it isn't working with its other parts correctly. The liver is really just about the most important organ in the body. Unfortunately, also the one most sensitive to a lot of different problems caused by negative chi. All right? Let's say, I'm going to take this as an example and go a step further. And then I'm not going to take any time off in this show because this is our last long show for a time. And I want to try to get as much in, so try to stay with me. Don't fall asleep. Okay, here we go. Let's say that you start having some problems in your liver. Well, the first question is, what have you done to your liver these days? Did you take a lot of acetaminophen, especially if you didn't take any NAC, which is a chemical that tends to reduce some of the adverse effects of it? And did you drink a lot of alcohol with that? That's a real toxic combination, by the way. How many times have you drank too much alcohol, then popped a couple Tylenol? That's a deadly combination. Deadly. Extremely dangerous. What would you do to try to change that? Well, the first thing is to stop abusing the liver. Stop taking the Tylenol and stop drinking alcohol altogether. I know some people say, oh, alcohol is good for you. Yeah, sure it is. Talk to your liver about that. See what it says. Yeah, I talk to my liver all the time. That's another thing. But at any rate, okay, so what are you going to do about that? Okay, first thing, stop the things that are causing problems. Get to bed earlier. Sleep through the night if you can. If you're depressed and you wake up in the middle of the night, read for a while something spiritual and go back to bed. If it's really a problem, then go ahead and do some exercise or something. But then, when your metabolism starts to drop again, you feel slightly drowsy, go back to bed. Maybe take an hour or two. You may not have the luxury of sleeping later, so that could be a problem for you. But anyway, sleep is critical. What about food? The more you eat non-meat, I'm not talking about just beef, I'm talking about non-meat in your life, the healthier you'll be, period. Provided you eat the right plants and take the right nutrients. If you're not conscious enough to do that, then you'll have to eat some meat. There's no way around it because you won't survive otherwise. For the people who are conscious enough to know how to nutraceutically keep themselves together, that's a better alternative for curing. So that will help you. And then if you're going to herbal remedies, you need plants that have a lot of prana and that are the roots are extremely effective in absorbing minerals which may not be that easily found in some soils. One of the plants is, believe it or not, a weed that we use called dandelion. Dandelions are extremely hardy. They're extremely strong. They have very strong prana. How do you know that? Well, the initial flower on them is yellow. That's another story. And the seeds of dandelion are extremely potent as an antibiotic, by the way. But getting to the most important element, what does dandelion do for the liver? Well, it does a lot of things. It provides the liver with sufficient amounts of prana in the right way because it has a lot of sixth-rate prana, so that it's very directed and focused in that area of the body. And so there's an example. There's dozens of herbs that also work with dandelion. One, another herb that works great is called burdock. But there's a whole bunch of them that do this. And they really make a difference in this particular area of the body. So if you had liver problems, cirrhosis, maybe hepatitis, whatever you got, this is the thing to consider. Herbs can make the difference in terms of providing the correct balance to the qi. They can correct the qi problems in the areas that you're specifically having. Amazing. So herbs do this if you understand how they work and where they work and why they work. Now you're getting the concept of what Fai Chi is about. It's a little complicated, I know. Look, this is not something you can just sit down and do in a few minutes. But nonetheless, as a science, this could be the future of all medicine, provided we get rid of universal health care. Because if we have that, we're not going to be able to practice this kind of medicine. It'll be illegal. Read the bill. Totally illegal. Go to jail. All right, so let me continue on. The other parts of the body, I'm going to give you one example. Let's take the heart. That's another feminine center. Why do so many people die from heart disease? It's the number one killer. Cancer is number two, by the way. The number one killer kills us because the heart is so prone to both the blood and what's pumping through the blood, and as a muscle that's connected into all the vessels and providing blood to all the rest of the body. The heart itself is a problem. The nutrients that feed the heart, which comes from the blood that the heart moves around, is the secondary nature of the problem. Poor chemistry in the body almost always leads to heart disease. It may not be the thing that kills you, because a lot of times the liver will get you before the heart will. But it is a big, big problem. How do you solve heart problems? Well, again, first thing is the heart is a muscle, so it needs certain amounts of exercise. As we grow older, we tend to move around less because we have other problems, sometimes joint problems, sometimes muscular issues, and sometimes just our metabolism falling and it's not feeling like moving around very much. The results are that the heart loses tone and becomes weak. As it becomes weak, the qi energy diminishes in the heart. There's a lack of qi energy. That creates a heart that generally just doesn't pump very strong, particularly when it's under stress due to the need to move around under certain circumstances. And this could lead to various problems for the heart. Sometimes the heart becomes the opposite. The energy from a selfish person who is very ungiving can lead to a heart that has too much energy focused into it. And then you get arrhythmias and usually fast beating in the heart and a lack of, we'll say, the ability for the heart to tolerate all the energy that is being pushed into its center, which is the heart chakra. Both of these conditions can be modified. How do you do it? Well, first of all, if you give more, you focus out more, you can eliminate the excess energy to the heart. That'll reduce some of the arrhythmias and the fast heartbeat. So that helps that, and it reduces the tension that the heart experiences from that. But the blood is a big part of the factor. And if the blood isn't moving properly, the heart has to push harder. The more the qi is going against the blood, because you have anti-qi, retained qi, some people call it retained kundalini, if you have that, it puts pressure against the heart, and it makes the heart fail because of the pressure of the blood itself. Also, the blood doesn't contain enough oxygen then, because it's not moving fast enough, or enough nutrients, because it gets its nutrients by moving through the liver. And if it doesn't pick up its nutrients from moving through the liver, then it's unnutrified blood. Well, that's not good. And then waste products build up, uric acid, calciums that become acidified, and other negative conditions develop in the blood, all because the qi isn't moving properly. Okay, what can you do about that? Well, eat alkalizing foods. That gets rid of some of the calcium acids, and also reduces the uric acid. It may help the kidneys to then eliminate some of the byproducts coming from that. At the same time, the kidneys are part of the abdomen problem. Remember that part of the six-ray issue. So that you can see the heart center is working with the six-ray center. The second and sixth are working together, and they do very much. It's a very strong connection between them, both feminine centers, etc. How else can you improve the heart? Well, you can improve it by giving it more prana. What does that do? Well, if you do moderate exercise and you walk outside during when it's reasonably light outside or soon after sunset, that improves the amount of prana it's getting. That can improve the center. Remember, this is a center that tends to not by nature get enough prana, because it's a center the qi is not as influenced by prana, and it needs more prana under many circumstances. So moderate exercise is important to try to help it. And then finally we get to the question of foods to eat, etc. The best thing again is dealing with it from the plant kingdom. There's a lot of solutions there. Hawthorn is extremely important as an herb to take. What does hawthorn have that's so important? Well, it has extremely high amounts of prana. If you read about the herb, you'll see it's one of the highest in pranic energies. But besides that, it also does something special. And if you use it with a couple of other herbs that not digitalis, by the way, but there's an herb that you, like foxglove, that you can use that has some digitalis in it, or better herbs than that, much better, that are safer, that work similar but are just a hell of a lot safer, those herbs will provide the heart with the correct, we'll say, balancing of the qi and getting the qi to move through it, and so that it doesn't get into arrhythmias and it stays beating stronger. Also, and some of the herbs that work really good with this are called adaptive herbs, and that includes Siberian ginseng, not the American or Chinese specifically, but Siberian. Suma is good. It's another one that, and Shizandra are good. These are herbs that actually help the heart to beat more strongly and more constantly without being stressed. And they provide the heart with food. So the muscle repairs itself from damage prior, from either heart attacks or just bad living. And it gets the heart to be a chi-moving organism in itself. The heart's center becomes more qi moving, particularly if you give more at the same time. Giving is really important with the heart, and giving at the highest and best level you possibly can. Giving to the wrong people or to people who are not the highest and best in any case, may damage your heart. Be aware of that. Some people say, well, I give all the time. I just give it to my no-good nephew, or I give it to the jerk down the street, or I give it to the Red Cross who is wasting it this year. I hope they're not. I just picked them out of thin air there. But the point is that if you give unwisely, damage your heart. Even though you think you're giving, you're not giving correctly. Only wise giving makes the heart work better. Unwise giving can produce failure. Oh, my God. Can kill a person, even though they're ignorant of what they're doing. Because the energies don't care about the fact that you don't know it's unwise. They just know that that isn't working for them. What happens when you don't give wisely? Let me explain the process. When you don't give wisely, you either empty the heart of its own energy supply, meaning you deplete yourself, or you clog the heart. Because when you don't give wisely, those that you're giving to aren't giving back anything to anyone else. And we're all connected together as a unit. Don't think of this as just yourself. We're all connected together. Some people call it karma. I don't care what you call it. We're all part of one. And that one is God. And so when you give wrongly, it adversely does the opposite of what you're thinking. Well, I'm getting rid of the energy now. You're actually causing more and more dark energy to replace the energy you're giving, which may be somewhat more lightened. You're making the energy in your heart more dark. As it becomes more dark, it becomes more gravitational. And after a time, I mean years, the heart becomes laden with energy, even though you thought you were giving. So giving wisely is very important. That requires meditation. Let's go to the sacral center now. The sacral center tells us whether or not we're giving wisely, but we have to become inner reflective about our giving. That's another feminine center that tends to get really clogged up. When it does, it produces all kinds of bad nutritional elements, produces a lot of different kinds of cancers. It's a serious problem. Okay, what can we do there? Well, again, diet is really important in this particular case. Also, making sure that you're eating things that allow you to use your colon, both your upper and lower colons, in their most efficient ways. If you eat things that constipate you, if you eat a lot of sugar, I'm talking about table sugar now. Table sugar is not a substitute for the sugars that are in plants in general. Table sugar is an abnormality created through the rum trade in the 1600s and 1700s in the western part of the world. And it comes from basically taking a waste product and making it into something that we use to try to produce energy in ourselves. But sucrose is not a good food. If you want to eat sugar, now a lot of people are going to disagree with me with this, eating fructose, fruit sugar, is a lot safer and a lot better. It's still not good to eat a tremendous amount of fructose or honey, which is 70% fructose. If you're not balancing that with proper amounts of protein and the correct amounts of minerals and the correct amount of antioxidants and eating fats that are not trans fats but are good fats for you. So the thing is that you've got to understand about nutrition. The colon is all about nutrition, and it's about making sure that you know that the things that you're eating are producing the right results in your body. Make sure that you go to the bathroom on a regular basis. If you don't, you have a big problem. This will lead to all kinds of abnormalities throughout the entire body, and especially in the liver and other places. So if you want to improve, you've got to have understanding, consciousness behind that improvement. And you need reflection on the giving part of your nature. If you're using the sacral center every day to say, am I wisely giving? Am I wisely giving this? Am I wisely giving that? Is this the best source, resource for who and what I'm doing? It's more important than having a lot to give. And the more you have to give, the more important it becomes to do it correctly. This is a tough problem for some people, I know. The easier ways to give are not necessarily the better ways, believe me. And the people who put demands on you for you to give, be very careful. All right, so let me continue and kind of sum up here. We're running out of time, not surprising. I'd love to go through hours and hours of examples to help people to understand more of what I'm explaining. But we don't have hours and hours. As a matter of fact, we have only a couple more minutes. It's important to realize that our bodies are constructed as much or more so actually, out of electromagnetic energy that has a phase that presently hasn't been discovered by modern science. So modern science is going about its way, looking at the wrong phase of things and not understanding that energy going at the direction it's looking at doesn't have anything to do with what really keeps people alive. And it doesn't know what keeps people alive. And it continually makes mistakes telling us to do the wrong things to produce health in our life. Majority of things that you find on the internet, cable television, or now being propagated by the government are plain wrong. They will lead to more illness and earlier death. So it's up to all of us to enlighten ourselves now, because we're going down a path in the United States that is dangerous and deadly. We're moving more and more towards earlier illness and death based upon models that have failed in every other country that they've been used in, unless those countries are extremely small. Okay, so, and that's because in small countries, sometimes the will of the people comes through. So the people really are making choices. But in the case of a country the size of the United States, it's going to be a few people with dictatorial, tyrannical tendencies wanting to control other people with their wrong knowledge and their wrong motives. Okay. So if we're going to stay healthy, we need to consider herbs. Herbs are a major part of it, and they're trying to get rid of them through a thing called Codex, which is coming, and universal healthcare. The two together will eliminate herbs from our ability to access them. And unless you're willing to go and break the law, go someplace else, live someplace else, herbs will not be available as they have been. And even the science of herbs is diminishing. I'm trying to change that by telling you about this now. And hopefully this has made some sense to you. I hope it has. And if you want to know more about 5-Qi, I'm thinking about at some time in the next year or so teaching a class on it. We're coming out with a new formula, by the way, called pain-free. It's one word, pain-free. That does what it says. It gets rid of pain, but it also helps in many other ways, which not really allowed to legally talk about. So, and even saying it gets rid of pain is probably illegal. So you have to understand that right now, the ability to even help people through the science is somewhat limited. Everything that we're trying to do as a spiritual group may soon be illegal. It's important, therefore, to get it now while you can. And if you want to find out more about pain-free, you certainly can contact us. We'll have it available in about 1 to 2 weeks, the first batches of it. And then it'll be available in larger amounts in about a month or two. But the more important thing is that that's just one formula. This is a whole science, and I hope that it's going to make some sense to you, and you'll be able to learn about it. Okay, we're out of time for right now. I know there's all kinds of things I'm supposed to give out messages about, et cetera. We'll do that for next week because we're just plain out of time. Hope this show has made a difference in your life and give you some reason why life is. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.